Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he's Chris Owen. We are the podcast reclaiming the public narrative in order to turn conversations and thus our world onto a more productive track, a track that upholds human flourishing, wellness, a world that works for everyone, Chris, with no one and nothing left out.
Our essential question is, what happens when we frame public questions and public issues using the lenses of moral philosophy and theology rather than the usual lenses of politics and economics? So our mission is to do that and to help other people do it as well. Our podcast here, Shayna and I, are practitioners of moral philosophy and theological reflection.
Notice, please, listeners, how prominently the word practice appears in the word practitioner.
Nice. You know, Shayna, let's talk about this for a little bit. I wanted to bring up, I just had this memory of Mark Twain, his famous quote, "It's not what we don't know that's a problem. It's what we think we know for sure that just ain't so."
Yeah. Yeah, amen. Amen, Chris.
And so with regards to our show, here's something I thought about that along those lines of Twain's little quip there. The general view of our public life is, if we get our politics in order, then our public life will be better. I'm suggesting we flip that narrative. We say, if we get our public life in order, then our politics will be better.
What a great segue into today's theme, which is going to be an exploration of our spheres of influence. However, before we go further on that, let me just explain to listeners who have not been with us before that Chris and I have this little spinny wheel we start the show off with. It's a bicycle tire mounted to it. You know, it in its simplicity, it defies its complexity. Let's just leave that there. There are 16 topics on the board, and we give the wheel a spin at the beginning of our show and do a little improv on wherever the sprinkler head lands as a way to kind of loosen ourselves up. Yeah, I think those sort of random topics when we're getting ready to enter into a conversation are good warm-ups to stretch the muscles of discussion before we actually have to use them.
I wish we could have our listening community come in and spin the wheel. I think that would be so much fun, but it's hard to gather all these people in a room. So I
in Wilton, in New Hampshire.
So I think I will spin it myself.
Go ahead, Chris. Why don't you give it a whirl? Chris is excited. Where'd it land, Chris?
The spinning wheel has landed on robust humility. Uh-huh. I love this phrase. Robust humility, we got it from Peter Admirand, who is a theologian teaching in Dublin, Ireland. And he talks about, he writes about, he thinks about interreligious dialogue. And that is a great model for how we need to be together in a plural public square, in a pluralistic society like the United States. Robust humility is, I'm going to put it this way, Shayna. Once I clear my throat, I will put it this way, that we come into conversations in our shared common life with two things that sometimes, well, two things that are in tension, and I mean when internally in individuals. And what we need is we need to come into conversations with conviction and humility. Conviction is our own commitments to what we believe and what we judge to be good and true. We come to conversations with our convictions, and we come with a robust, and we need to develop the muscles, a metaphor you like to use. We also need to come into these conversations with a robust humility. So it's not a humility that's, my opinion's not important, or I'll just cave in to what somebody else is going to say, but rather a strong, like a grounded humility, which says, I have enough power and authority and groundedness in my own self that I can take on board somebody else's point of view. And you talk about this beautifully in your own way. So that's my understanding of robust humility.
Yeah, I take those conversations from the process theologians among us. But and I love the way you framed that. It's so interesting. Robust humility is kind of where you started off with Mark Twain's quote, right? It's not so much about what we don't know that's going to get us. It's going to be the things that we're cocksure that we know that in fact aren't true that are going to get us. I preached on this weekend. It was talking about, you know, why is it so hard for us to do the internal work of anti-racism? And largely, you know, I think for many white folks, it is, for a lot of white liberal folks, it's because we already consider ourselves to be anti-racist. So so the notion that we could do something that would, you know, perpetrate a hurt on people of color, on the LGBTQ plus community, is an affront to us. But I asked them, imagine, I said, you know, imagine that you were going to learn something new. Imagine that I was going to teach you how to operate the technical system here at the church that we use now for multi-platform worship. You wouldn't expect to get that all right. And more to the point, if you were trying to get something done and you were stuck, and one of our experts leaned in and said, oh, you just press this button, your response would be, thank you. But in the realm of anti-racist work, because we think we already know it, right? When somebody points out that we've done something wrong or tries to help us move something forward by introducing something that we clearly didn't know before, we get defensive and we get angry. So, you know, in a robust humility, while it sounds, you know, like something we have to work really hard to cultivate, you know, we have to work really hard to cultivate that. There may be also a side of robust humility that is about a letting go. You know, it may be that the realm of dwelling in a robust humility gives us permission to just screw it up and say, I'm so sorry. And it's not, you know, the end of the universe. It's like, I'm so sorry. I grew up as a white person in America. Of course, there are going to be things that I'm going to have blinders on about. And I am a person who is engaged in the work and I screw it up all the time and I get called out on it and I hate it. It's not comfortable. You know, I want to be better at it than I am, but so far I'm not. And so my choice is I can hang in there and be present to the learning curve, right? And be gentle with myself, which is part of a robust humility, isn't it? Right? To be gentle with myself. You know, or I can just get angry and pissed off and walk away from the whole thing, which doesn't actually do anything to improve the situation. So I like it. Mark Twain and a Mark. Wow. Wayne and anything but a robust. Mark Twain and a robust humility. That's a nice pairing this morning, Chris. Yeah. Thanks for getting us off on such a good foot.
Of course, the spinny wheel leads us there. And I just. A quick rejoinder. I just love what you just said. And it makes me think of how can we create public spaces where that kind of learning, the unafraid to make a mistake, that is a creative place with possibility. And our public spaces, we don't have a lot of public spaces where that kind of process can happen. Spheres of influence.
Yes. Spheres of influence.
Dun, dun, dun. Spheres of influence.
Spheres of influence and John Wayne. Here we go.
Tell me what you had in mind. I would love to hear. This is an outgrowth of last week's conversation when I claimed that the election didn't matter. And we had that conversation. And towards the end, Shana, you lifted up this notion of spheres of influence and the places where we can exercise our own agency.
So, yeah, thanks, Chris. There's an organization here in New Hampshire called the Granite State Organizing Project, and they were leading folks to do something called deep canvassing. And deep canvassing is not knocking on the door and saying, we're here to talk to you about, you know, and put the issue on the table. It's knocking on the door and saying, we're here to ask you about what issues are important to you. And the canvassers are taught a process That enables them to share their own story in a way that helps the person, if, you know, if they're willing to talk to you at all, to help that person, in fact, go deeper. Now, you don't knock on a lot of doors in a day, and even over a full campaign cycle, you know, you could say there's more efficient ways to do this. Yes, there are. But what deep canvassing is teaching us is that these deep connections really help us hear one another. And the canvassing then done, you know, to shed light on a conversation that generally doesn't go very deep, that gets stuck up just in the talking points, and then people end up yelling at each other. This allows us to get past that. So that's one example of how individuals can use their spheres of influence, in fact, expand their spheres of influence through the process of deep canvassing. But even on a personal level, you know, just thinking about who are the people, the problems that we face today are so ginormous. They're so overwhelming. I think it's easy to just be overwhelmed and say there's really nothing I can do about this. There's something we can all do. It may be a small piece, but again, if we're practicing a robust humility, that, you know, not being able to, you know, be the leader of the next civil rights movement should not stop anyone from making the change that they can, and be that change in your own household, change in conversations. You know, everybody has a sphere of influence. Everybody influences someone or something. So that's what I was thinking about.
Mm-hmm. I want to get to these deep canvassing. First of all, I thank you because I did not know about that. So I feel like I learned something about what that is. And it reminded me of, you know, we have a connection. Our show and project has a connection with Angela Pape and her work as a faith-based community organizer. So there's this sense of, it's such a beautiful model for what we are doing on this, in this project, because it starts not with the partisan political talking point, but rather starts with robust humility and asking, just being in conversation, what are you concerned about? What do we see in our community? And so it's a pre-political position which grounds connection and the formation of community. And so the pre-political piece of that is that it's people coming together towards some kind of understanding. And then you can exercise collective action. You can be mobilized together to get things done, to improve your community. It's a great picture and a great model.
Showing up. I mean, last night I was in Westmoreland, New Hampshire. It's this tiny little town north of Keene, and there's a United Church of Christ congregation there. They have a little wayside pulpit, you know, one of those outside, sort of like a bulletin board outside that, and they had the a rainbow flag in there with words on it about, you know, we believe that love is love, and so on and so forth. And the thing was defaced with Nazi propaganda the other day, Tuesday, the night of the election, first time it was defaced, spray painted. And the members of the church cleaned it up, and then it was spray painted again. And word got out, and last night there was a candlelight vigil in this tiny little town. And all of these folks came, and I think showing up for something like a candlelight vigil is such a humbling experience, because, you know, I could stand alone in front of the church with a candle, but with 100 other people who are just people, they're just people who came out of this sleepy little village. Some of them are congregants. Some people came from, you know, they ask people who's a member of the church, to raise their hands. And if you live here in Westmoreland, raise your hand. How many of you came from out of town? How many people came from better than 10 miles away? I was there with two friends from Texas, bless their hearts, you know, just people, right? Just showing up with a candle. And it reminded me of this quote I read, was talking about a gentleman who was holding a lit candle in front of the White House. And somebody asked, do you seriously think standing here with a lit candle in front of the White House is going to change them. And he said, it may not change them, but I do this in order to not have them change me. You know, and so that this notion that, and I've heard similar things, read similar things expressed by people who are held captive in Nazi prison camps. You know, what they did to hold on to their souls, if the only landscape I have any influence over is defined by the parameters of my own skin, then I will work to hold on to that because it matters that things are right in my own heart, right? Can't make any change in the world until I get a handle on that sphere of influence. So whatever sphere is ours to influence, we must in this time, we can't afford to waste any goodwill. That is a robust humility, to do the work, to tend the field, to plant the seed, knowing you may not be there to get the harvest.
It's a testimony to the power of showing up.
Mm-hmm.
I just love this, this as we tease this out, because this really does, just say it again, it gets to the heart of our project, because all of these examples that you're raising create public space in some fashion or another. Part of it is sharing that candlelight vigil image of sharing an experience, being together. It's public. It has political consequences, probably, although it's, you can't trace exactly what that might be. But the power of it is that it creates a public. I mean, the first thing that totalitarian governments do is isolate people.
Mm-hmm.
And so these kinds of showing up, these kinds of witness, they are, I mean, Tocqueville said this, this is the lifeblood mm-hmm. of democratic governance, of being able to self-govern. Just love it. So it's funny.
And we've talked before about the importance of democracy. Like, a democracy cannot survive if people don't genuinely care about one another.
Exactly.
That's
yeah.
the heart and soul of it. So what are we doing in these gatherings? We're actually, I don't mean to sound Pollyanna-ish, and I think if anyone hears this as Pollyanna-ish, they are grossly misunderstanding the power of love. But what we are doing is we are centering love. You know, in a time, the other thing authoritative governments do initially, they come in, they create an enemy. So they divide people, and when we create spaces that bring people together and center love, that is a powerful platform to operate from.
Yeah, yeah. Let me just give one more example, because it's funny. It's not funny. It's maybe providential that all of these things come together at the same time. But yesterday I gave a talk at a local Rotary Club, and I've never been to a meeting of Rotarians before. My talk was about this very thing, about our project. I shared what in God's name and what we're about. And one of the things, two comments about this, Shana. One is, at the beginning of the meeting, they sang America the Beautiful. And singing is something our culture has lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find places where people will sing together and know songs mm-hmm. together. This, again, may seem trivial, but I think it's actually profound.
Mm-hmm.
The singing that I experienced yesterday, it wasn't especially beautiful,
mm-hmm.
but it was in a way, because when we sing together, again, we create shared space. And if you're really singing, you're not listening to your own voice. You're listening to what's going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the second thing to say about the Rotarians is that, again, this is pre-political public space. It's the voluntary organization that we learn. This is the school of democracy. This is the place where we learn how to act cooperatively to get things done. This particular Rotary Club is engaged in a project of creating a public sculpture garden in the local town.
Mm.
Perfect. Perfect. It's not political, but it creates public space.
Well, I love that. I love that, you know, we sang last night in Westmoreland too. The minister led us in This Little Light of Mine. You know, everybody knows the words, and off we went. It reminded me, in the Jewish tradition, we talk about ruach, which is sacred breath. The idea being, you know, when a baby first pops through mom's birth canal and that your chest expands and you, that first breath that a baby gets is sacred and is from God. And that when we die, our last breath goes back to God. So breath is seen as sacred, right? And when we sing together, what are we doing? We are in this time of COVID. This may sound a little unnerving, but you know, we're sharing, we're raising up together sacred breath. I have been at demonstrations before where something was about to go sideways. Maybe counter demonstrators showed up and the crowd was starting to get a little flipped out. People's anxiety levels came out. All of a sudden, somebody just started singing, "Dona nobis," and everybody who knew the song sort of chimed in, and it just took the pressure right down, and suddenly everybody was just singing, and again, love got centered over hate, you know? It's powerful stuff, but to see its power is to walk in the way of people like Jesus Christ, to walk in the way of prophets like Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, you know, to see the power of love and nonviolence as the way. We always have the option to center that, and there is so much need for it in the world today. You know, that's the sort of easy part. Like, it's not like you're trying to cram love into a box. It's already overflowing with it. So there's room. There's room for more love, you know, and we can generate that and start impacting whatever little spheres there are around us.
If you are in our listening community and you are hearing this as a call to show up, you are hearing this as a call to join a voluntary community of some kind, like the Rotarians. They're not paying me to say this. If you are hearing this as a call to, attend a local house of worship, I think you're hearing correctly. I think that's the call we're putting out there, Shana, and certainly
not embarrassed to say it. We talk about in my house, the family motto was do something, even if it's wrong, you know, but do something, right? And I think in this day and age, the stakes are high enough that it is time, if you're not doing something or you think there's nothing you can do, there is. Get quiet, get still, and listen for the still small voice within to lead you. It will take you someplace. You will find a place. Everyone makes a difference. Everyone matters.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light.
Today's show is sponsored by
Libertarian Frozen Pizzas.
Libertarian Frozen Pizzas, yeah.
Single serve, individually wrapped. Find them in your grocer's freezer case. Libertarian frozen pizza. Save yourself from the tyranny of having to share a slice.
Seriously, our sponsors at Patreon. Hello. We're very grateful for those who sponsor this program on Patreon. You can join that crew by going to patreon.com. Why do I always think it's .org? patreon.com/whatingodsname.
You can sign up for our newsletter at our website. Our website is whatingods.com. Shana, we spell that with a W-H-I-T.
W-H-I-T? How do we spell what?
Wit in God's name.
Wit in God's name. Let's try that one again. What in God's name? At
W-H-A-T-I-N-G-O-D-S. Great to be with you today.
Always great to be with you, Chris.